Conversations from the Heart unravels big and small ideas, developments, and breakthroughs in cardiology. Brought to you by the World Heart Federation and presented by Pablo Perel and Boriana Pervan, from our heart to yours. Thank you for letting us in.
We are at the same level, we are at the same achievements, we are at the same training. I think this is actually unfair.
I really do believe that you can't be what you can't see.
Hello and welcome to the Conversations from the Heart podcast. Today we have a very special edition which will mark the beginning of a series of conversations about women and cardiovascular health, a topic we are tackling head-on at the World Heart Federation. To start us off, we have two very special guests with whom we'll speak about women empowerment in cardiology. I am pleased to welcome to the show Aisha Kader, who is an interventional cardiologist originally from Sri Lanka and currently working at the Ibrahim Cardiac Hospital and Research Institute in Dhaka, Bangladesh, and Zainab Atiyah Dakhil, an academic and interventional cardiologist working at Ibn Al-Bitar Cardiac Center, Baghdad, Iraq.
It's a pleasure to greet you here. And I'll start with Aisha. Can you tell us what's happening today with your life? Where do we find you? And is this something you want to share with us?
Hi, thank you so much, Boriana, for having me on this very important podcast. I am actually at my childhood home in Colombo, Sri Lanka on vacation. So it's a great time to be doing this podcast. It's like coming full circle because I'm generally based as a cardiologist with an interest in interventional cardiology in Dhaka, Bangladesh. And I've actually come to see my dad, who was really the reason behind me getting into cardiology, because he's someone who has had complex ischemic heart disease for the last 40 years. And I've literally grown up seeing him have it and seeing him being taken care of. And now I play an active role in taking care of him. So I think it's a very pertinent point to mention. And thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Zainab? Where do we find you?
Now I'm at the Vital Cardiac Center, which is the center that I had my interventional cardiology fellowship. Because of the security issues in Iraq, the blast and bombings and so on, when I became actually an intern, this was my keys, and I want to be a surgeon. But because my college, mainly because of the gender segregation, they didn't offer me a position at the surgical department. Instead, they offered me a position at the Department of Medicine.
So in a way, the context in Iraq and your gender defined within the field in cardiology, what job you could do, what job you couldn't do. I will come back to you and how the segregation affected you in a minute. Now,
Aisha, you're currently in your childhood home. Have you always had that drive and desire to help others? How did it came about as a child growing up in Sri Lanka? Was it something that you always wanted to do, to help other people, to treat people? How are you as a child?
I've always wanted to do medicine for as long as I can remember. I don't think I've ever thought about doing anything else. And in fact, the reason I ended up in Dhaka, Bangladesh, is because I did so many extracurricular activities during my A-levels, which is the exit exam for medical school, that I didn't get into medical school in Colombo, Sri Lanka. The first scholarship that came was in Dhaka, Bangladesh, and I was determined to do medicine. In fact, a lot of my teachers also said that perhaps this is a sign, perhaps you should do law or something else, which you qualified for in your home country. But I really think that if you set your heart on doing something, you have to follow through with it. And there will be obstacles, but they're not things that you cannot circumvent and you can come out of it. And here I am now. I've ended up in Dhaka, Bangladesh, and one of the few who are in interventional cardiology as women in the country. And I really feel like I can not only contribute to the field and to help people, but I'm also finding myself in a position where I'm able to offer mentorship to others who are like me and who might want to follow in similar footsteps, because I've been there, done the road, and know better now how to tell others what they should and shouldn't do in terms of progressing.
Sounds very easy, the way you describe it. And I think you have a very positive attitude, which I'm sure helped you along the way. You know, I think all of us, regardless where we are and where we grow up as women, you know, have a difficult road ahead of us. And we have to be very determined to do what we have set ourselves to do. I grew up in a communist oppressive regime in Bulgaria. And during my time there as a child, there was this apparent equality between the women and men, as in women also worked. But once they came back at home, they were the ones who were taking care of the entire household and, you know, completely in charge of everything, while the men were relaxing because they've had a long day at work, which actually the same thing happened to my mom. It's just that she didn't have the right to relax once at home. Actually, she started, you know, her second job, taking care of the family. So being brought up like this really left me constantly looking for inequality and trying to fix it where I can, to the extent that I can, and being quite triggered by it when I see it. So in a way, it may be a negative feeling, as in, you know, it's your values are being conflicted, but you train yourself to use it for good. So I just wonder, in that sense, maybe Zeynep, how did this come about more as a value of A, helping each other and helping other people, and B, your role in society as a young woman?
Because I faced the gender imbalance maybe, and because I was almost the only candidate in cardiology fellowship, yes, I felt that I was alone. As Aisha remarked, we have our role in that we can mentor others, we can be the role models for others. In my country, after I finished my international fellowship, the first thing that I talked with the president of the council is how we can increase women in the field. Because here, especially in Iraq, with the, you know, the traditional, the cultural factors, we have to increase women in the field so they can access the cardiac care. And actually, we succeeded in that. Now, for the first time in Iraq, we have 3 women in interventional cardiology fellowship. This is really something occurred for the first time.
I'd just like to jump in and just reiterate what Zeynep said about helping and about helping women, because in the vast majority of countries like ours, there's also a cultural component. And sometimes women don't want to have their echo done by a man. And I suppose before a time where there were female cardiologists and females scanning them, this was probably even a deterrent to seeking care. And we know that women are undertreated, underdiagnosed. In fact, even when we did an analysis of ACS patients at our center on a registry, we found that although women were older and presented with more comorbidities, we found that fewer of them underwent angiography and significantly fewer of them received PCI. So I think as women physicians, we are also able to advocate for female patients and also be able to present ourselves as those that they can approach. And I really think that things like women's heart health clinics, which have been very successfully launched in other countries, are something that we can look at to do better in our countries as well.
I think part of your success is that you are so positive and you have so much drive. And I think both of you, not only in a world that women represent a quite small percentage of cardiologists, but you're both interventional cardiologists in settings where it's quite challenging. I know you are involved in other initiatives. I mean, not only looking at gender inequality, but other initiatives that maybe you can share about and how to improve women representation in cardiology. But I want to come back to some of the difficulties you have, because I know you are so positive and that's why you succeed. But I would like you to share concrete examples and things that happened to you in your career as a doctor, or Zeynep mentioned briefly about her decision to be an interventional cardiologist, but maybe how you felt like it was different for you because you were a woman in comparison to your colleagues that were men.
I have to say, to stay positive, that many of the senior and consultants who are our tutors are actually very positive and good regarding being female cardiologist or a trainee. But many of them also are a little bit restricted in giving us the opportunity for training. To be a little bit discriminating in giving the opportunities for the trainees, more for the male trainees rather than the female trainees, I think this is actually unfair. And this is something that I was facing. Sometimes it was a little bit painful. For example, when we are reaching within the third year training, we are usually leading the primary PCI cases. We are leading and within the backup of the consultant. This is a rule in most of the centers. It was very frequent that when a male trainee is on call, the same senior is giving trainee handling the case from A to Z. While, for example, when I'm on call, I'm not allowed to do the primary PCI to the patient, and the senior usually jump in or give it to one who is more senior than me. And we are at the same level, we are at the same achievements, we are at the same training. So this occurs frequently, actually, even in the cases of the CTO or the complex bifurcational cases. I have to say it's not a general thing. The other example regarding the infrastructure, like when you are wanting change room, for example, you have doctors change room, you have the staff change room, but you don't have at all in the hospital female doctors change room. So even the infrastructure in the cardiac centers is usually more designed for the male rather than the female.
And what about you, Aisha?
At every stage of your career, there's a different kind of deterrent, this benevolent sexism that you're offered on a platter by others about how and why you should not do cardiology. When I first decided on cardiology, I was told that, oh, but when you become a mother, how it's going to be difficult. And I said, well, maybe I can be the kind of mother that can do both. And I was like, oh, no, but it's not really that easy. So they have this benevolent sexism of doing better at trying to deter you. And like you said, it's also a lot of attitude. So the more I'm told I can't do something, I want to do it. And that's something that has worked well for me, I suppose, so far. And later on, once I've decided on interventional cardiology, then you get a ton of advice on how it's not safe and there's radiation issues. And that's when I really delved into it and found that there's so much of misconception around radiation issues and also radiation in pregnancy. I have not ever been pregnant, but there have been colleagues who have been told a lot of things that is not accurate, which have deterred them from working in the cath lab. And I would imagine that, especially in countries like this, if a girl were to get pregnant, there would not be as many cath lab opportunities as there might be in other parts of the world, where perhaps there's better monitoring of dosimetry, et cetera. And even once you have made it, you will get certain people making snide comments. And perhaps, I mean, I don't want to sound petty, but when it keeps happening to you, it's not very encouraging. And if it happens on a bad day, we are all human, aren't we? Because I've had colleagues say to me that, oh, but if you're given 3 out of 6 days of cath, would you be able to handle it the way I am? This was a male colleague. I'm pretty sure you won't. And I had to tell him that, look, you have to give me the 3 out of 6 days, see if I can handle it or not. And then perhaps you could come to your conclusion. And I mean, ironically, the week before I came home, I did 7 days straight out of nine days in the cath lab for 12 hours with radiation and leads on. And so there's nothing you can't do, but there will always be people telling you that you can't do it. And it really comes down to an attitude and also seeing people who have done it before. I really do believe that you can't be what you can't see. And for me, even though I may not have seen them in front of my eyes at my institute, I have drawn a lot of inspiration from other women who have made it despite obstacles. And when you talk to them, there really are very similar stories. There's a pattern, and we all just have to do our best to overcome it.
And let me tell you that there is a pattern, and these stories are similar in very different fields, such as mine, journalism and communications, yeah. Especially becoming a mother and traveling and going to conferences. If I was to count the amount of times I've heard things like, when they realize I have children, first, that's the first shock, because by default, I shouldn't have children if I'm there. And then when the realization comes that I have young children, then the judgment comes. And often it's even inertia. It's even, unfortunately, by fellow women who, you know, for one reason or another, will really question how come you've left, you know, a baby at home or a young child at home. And what is making you come to that place and stay there for a week? Actually, your passion for working. It's very simple. the same passion and heart that you put into parenting.
No, exactly. I'd really like to pick up on that about how women should do better at supporting women. Because I think part of, like you said, the problem is inertia and this certain subservient acceptance that this will be the norm. And sometimes you have to fight that as well, in addition to. So it's like you're the girl who's not okay with what other girls have been with so far. And that's really an additional challenge. And we should just normalize things for women, first of all. A male colleague is never going to be asked that. So why should you be asked that?
I think also it brings, I mean, a more societal aspect of this inequality, of course, is how you're talked about this, but also the realities. I think, Aisha, you were saying actually about how you balance your family life and work life. And that is because in many places, I mean, women, maybe they're having more responsibilities, but still at home, they have the most important role. And of course, that's still the case in many societies, that women are increasing to be in the workforce, but at home, they still have the main role. And in the best case, men are helping. So I think that's whole societal change needs to happen.
If we just can show them what are the women in cardiology, big names, legends, that really the things that impact the practice, change the medicine, change the cardiology dramatically, I think so many things can be changed. For me, despite that, I was usually seeking advancement in career and I was satisfied with my place later on. When I knew other people, other women in cardiology, see their achievements, see the big names that I was only reading about, I start to shoot for stars.
It's clear that you've been inspired, and I'm sure you're inspiring others. One thing is to have models and see that it's possible. I would like to hear what you think about those characteristics or values that women can bring in terms of leadership.
Women are known to be more empathetic leaders, and emotional intelligence and empathy are increasingly necessary in today's world, particularly as leaders. We know that patterns of leadership are also changing, and post-pandemic particularly, we need to lead with empathy. So that's a diverse component that perhaps women may inherently bring to it, but I don't want to generically attribute the characteristic only to women. I really do think that perhaps that diversity in terms of gender is also a diverse spectrum within the gender of women as well, because we all have different leadership styles. And something that has been particularly written about and spoken about is that women lead with empathy and that women have to be a particular kind of leader. I really wish people would come out of this box and expect a certain kind of leadership for a certain gender. You can be an effective leader irrespective of what your gender is. For example, maybe my leadership qualities are not the most female, but if it's a good leadership quality, then it should be appreciated. Empathy is not a weakness, and empathy should not only be attributed to women as well. It's something we should all have as part of emotional leadership, I think. So you're right. I think we bring a more diverse spectrum in terms of leadership. And I also think we really do think. For example, we recently ran an international interventional conference from our hospital. And I really do think that certain things are not discussed. For example, we have female cardiologists, but they're not making it to panels. They're not making it to leadership positions in the proportion of the numbers that they are. And this is a problem, I think, particularly in Asian countries, where the whole aspect of leadership isn't really being discussed sufficiently also, because it's very well discussed in the Western worlds. And there's a lot of movements to stop having manuals, etc., but it's less so much discussed in many parts of Asia. I had to very subtly put it across to the committee that maybe we have this lady on this panel, and we made sure that all 13 sessions had female representation on the panels. But if I had maybe made a song and dance about it and said that, oh, we have to have women on all these panels, it may not have worked out. Sometimes getting a job done may need to be done slowly, stealthily, if you want to eventually get what you want done.
Currently, it's so unequal. That there is both a need of imposing and pushing for, if you want, more representation, being a bit more forceful from top down, but also, as you said, you know, just working to raise that generation of women who feel equally empowered as men to do what they want to do in life.
Actually, I just want to highlight something that really, if we want to do a change, it will not only be from the women in cardiology. Yes, it's important. But women, I'm talking about the medical field now, they should see their role models from the start. Me, as a senior lecturer in a college, the most heads of the societies, the, you know, the student leadership is usually male. I never encountered really a female dean of a medical college. So with such loss of a young woman seeing medical students, seeing their role models from the start, we are just losing a very important period within the establishing the character and the value of the female physician. So I think we have to do the change from the start.
If I could just jump in, I really do think that the change has to come holistically and collectively. It's our male allies and male sponsors that also have a very important role to play. I would not be where I am today without my mentors who have actually, until I was matched as part of a mentorship program last year, all the mentors at my institute have been male, and they have actively not only mentored me, they've sponsored me to get the opportunities that I have gotten. And I think that can go a long way because it has to come both ways, and we all have to work collectively towards it. And it's a collective responsibility.
I think you already mentioned a few things that you think need to happen, but is there anything that is not happening now that we didn't mention or you would like to highlight that it need to happen in the future?
Regarding women in cardiology, I think we need to establish some regular network. We are seeing so many things in the international organization, like in SCAI, in ACC, regarding the mentorship, regarding the helping and exchanging experiences between the early career and maybe mid and late career. But actually, it's only very few positions. It's only very few opportunities. For the low-middle income countries and for us in developing countries, it's difficult to get involved in such opportunities. We don't have these, you know, all the mentors and so on, the role models, the female mentors. We are hoping that we have some programs or something that when we are getting in, we can get match and get help. Some more frequent opportunities for that.
To jump in, it's very commonly stated that women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. So maybe we are getting mentored, but opportunities also have to come frequently at the same frequency that perhaps some of our male colleagues are getting them. That is perhaps something that, especially in South Asia, because as Boriana said, it should not be about how much you know a person or if you know so-and-so that you get it. There has to be greater equity in terms of opportunities, as Zainab said, for training, for grants, for travel, etc. And that's perhaps something that is not happening as much as it should. And there also needs to be, this is something that should happen over the longer term, but a societal change. Pablo, you mentioned about how women have to bear the brunt of domestic workloads. And that's something that's perhaps more prevalent in many parts of Asia that might be less so in other parts of the world. And I think having a good partner, an understanding, supportive partner really goes a long way in terms of reducing that load. But that's not something that's inherent in certain societies. And that change also has to come.
I think it's very interesting that you are bringing issues that are relevant for Asia in particular and low and middle income countries. And I think it's very relevant for us as the World Heart Federation, because I mean, we're the World Heart Federation, we are a global organization. And I think, as I think Zainab was saying, many of these narratives, of course, come from, we can read it from the US or from Europe. And I think it's important to hear these voices and the particular challenges that women face in, of course, it's context specific. Asia might be different from Africa or from Latin America. I can definitely tell you that this kind of balance between, I mean, work and family, I think it's an issue for all women around the world, but of course with certain context characteristics. But I think it's important to raise this voice and hear people like you. Moving forward, and I think in relation to my last comment, what do you think the World Heart Federation could do to support people like you? You're really succeeding, but you want to help other women in cardiology and highlight and improve.
Thank you. I think it's also something that we need to acknowledge that it's a good time to be a woman in cardiology because there's a lot of conversation and a lot of opportunity for us to highlight challenges and therefore rectify situations. And as you said, there are things that so many organizations can do. I think the key is to ensure that there's diversity in committees, in panels, in opportunities, in grants that are being given. And we already saw that in our EL cohort last year in Lisbon, where it was pretty much a 50-50 balance. And those who attended in person were majority female. So that was fantastic. Really ensuring that diversity will go a long way towards not only sort of tackling issues now, but in maintaining and making sure that it goes on and on into the future. And we all know that a more diverse workforce will help our patients better. So that's really what I would ask the World Heart Federation to do.
Thank you. What a strong message and a very tangible ask this is. It comes down to empowerment, inspiration, empathy, and community, training, mentoring, and giving women the wings and the opportunity to fly and help us achieve cardiovascular health for everyone. Thank you so much, Aisha and Zainab. And to our listeners, stay tuned for the next one on women and cardiovascular health. Goodbye.